Mr. Bob Cage by John Clee for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The project is part of the tobacco industry project that I've been working with. The interview is being conducted in Maysville on February the 6th, 1986. Okay, I'd like to start by asking you about your background, where you were born, what kind of environment you came up in, and how it relates to the tobacco business.
Well, I don't think my early life had much to do with what happened to me later in it. Mm-hmm. My mother and father were divorced when I was seven. Mm-hmm. Before that time, he worked on my grandfather's place.
Mm-hmm. This was
during the Depression in Virginia.
Yes.
And being that my mother and father were divorced at seven, we moved to my grandfather. Mm-hmm. It was about the only place we had to go. My mother was pregnant at myself and my brother, and he was a traveling salesman. So other than working some summers, like when we were 8 or 9 or 10, mm-hmm. helping suckering tobacco,
yes,
for about 20, let's see, about a quarter a day, I think they paid us, and our meal.
Yes, sir.
That's what we got, and that is about as much as I had to do with tobacco.
Early contact.
Right. Then later, when I went to school, went to high school in a little town called Halifax, well, in South Boston, they had a National Tobacco Festival, in which was a very big thing in those for that little town.
Yes.
Because we had famous people coming in from Hollywood, and the governor, and I remember James Farley being there, who was a big man for Roosevelt and all that sort
yes,
of
sir.
Thing. So the tobacco festival was a big thing for us. And we saw the back in the fields, knew about it, but I never saw an auction until I was about 27 years old.
Is that right? Now, what were you doing
in the meantime?
In those early years?
Well, I was in the Marines. I was in college. I'd done all kinds of things. I was in the Department of State Foreign Service. And I was in California teaching tennis and swimming at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And then at the racquet club, and came home, and my mother had married a gentleman who was in the warehouse, tobacco warehouse business, and I saw my first auction. I was totally fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And I had been messing around. Bert lost my sense of values in California. I didn't know. When I came back, and I decided, well, this is what I want to do.
Yes, sir.
So I...
Now, how does that happen? You found an interest.
Yeah.
How did you start out?
All right. Okay. Well, as soon as I saw this, instinctively, I said, well, you know, this suits me. I would enjoy this. I found out the kind of money the guys made. I found out the hours, how much they worked, where they went, a lot about it. And I decided right then that I wanted to become a tobacco auctioneer, but I had a contract to fulfill in California, so I had to go back. And I took a couple of recordings of auctioneers back with me and listened to them. And then practice in the locker room at the Beverly Hills Hotel, at the Sand and Pool Club, and practice. And the lady I was going with was bidding, you know, bidding for me. And I practiced and just practiced a chant and practiced and wrote numbers on the lockers, mm-hmm. you know, write two different numbers on it and started one number and finished with the other and knock it out to American or Reynolds and did that. Just around the locker room, you know.
So you were already convinced at that
yeah.
point you want to be an auctioneer.
Yeah, that's it.
That was it. Part of the business.
Yeah, I just decided I wanted to get in something that was more fascinating than what I'd been doing. I'd been playing mainly for a number of years. And
and when you studied those chants, there are significant differences.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't, nobody can sing just like anybody else or has the same intonation or the same resonance or the same structure of the mouth and the nose and sure. you know the voice box and vocal cords, etc. And but I did just take these records, and they used to have the Lucky Strike Hit Parade mm-hmm. years ago, and L.A. Speed Riggs, who was never a great auctioneer but had a good voice for the radio, and I used to imitate him and stuff, like still can do that.
Yes,
and I practiced and decided that this was going to be my life, and I found it very interesting things. You can learn a lot in 1 year if you're intense enough about it. Mm-hmm. You can learn one hell of a lot if you really get intense about it, and I was.
Now, as you study tobacco auctioneers, they're different than going to an auction at a house somewhere.
Right, it's different. It's quite different in that tobacco auction area is the fastest mm-hmm. type of selling you can do. You can sell tobacco, and you also can sell antiques. The tobacco auctioneer can, or sell cars, or sell livestock, and sell anything, because he can reduce his chat down. Mm-hmm. But a guy who sells antiques, or a guy who sells even livestock, cannot pick the chat up to the necessary pace it takes to conduct a real effective sale. Mm-hmm. So you can do the reverse. You know, you can put, but you can slow it down. Right. So we can sell anything, I think. I mean, I've sold everything you can sell at one time or another. But most of the other guys who sell other stuff can't sell tobacco.
Right.
And I learned found out who the best auctioneers were and found out why they were better. They missed less bids. They had a more rhythmical chant. They got along better. Found out all these things and studied under them and learned, you know, all on my own. I had enough money I'd saved I didn't do something else. I just did that. Wherever there was a sale going, I was watching and listening and practicing.
You created your own school of auctioneers.
That's about it. That's it. And I've talked to a couple of people since then about the same way I did it, you know, because mm-hmm. it was effective for me. And I think I haven't found out any more effective way of doing it. Nobody else has come up with it. Yet I don't care anything about running a school. You don't learn a hell of a lot in auctioneering schools. Mm-hmm. It really is absolutely this school of experience.
I see.
You know, you can learn a chant, and you can learn the mechanics, but you just got to get in there and take your hard knocks and miss bids and get chewed out and you know, get out of breath and say, excuse me, and I'm sorry, and be able to handle it, you know.
Yes, sir. Now, this was in the 1950s. Now, which markets were you following then?
I went to Kentucky with a fellow named Bill Martin to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and he was selling dark fire tobacco. Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be a good place to learn. That's the first time I ever sold any. I was mostly just practicing. Well, by the time I got in, I'd followed him so long and knew the habits of the buyer so well, I did all right.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember a year on this, about when this was?
About 1950, my guess would be 52 or 3. Mm-hmm. I don't have a very good recall about what happened 10 years ago or 5 years ago, yes. You know, that sort of thing. Uh-huh. A lot of people do, but I certainly don't.
But now, you followed him on that market. No,
he didn't turn it over. He just said, "Hey, I got a fella here that he's learned to be an auctioneer, and ask a warehouseman, could I get in?" So I did. And tobacco then, they started the tobacco, and the only way you went was up. Like it started, if it had a $50 support, they'd start at 50, and you would get 1, 2, 3. You didn't have to drop back and then get bids and go up again.
I see.
Like you have to do. So it made it fairly easy. You know, I've got you at 1, you at 2, and you at 3, and then go on with it. Mm-hmm. So I just got a little bit, and then I went to Maryland. That was the next market in the spring, and went up there and got a job tending bar in the evenings and was on sale all day during the day.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I learned right much about it there. And got a chance to finish up that year for about $45 a week for a guy to go south. They had enough faith in me. And then I apprenticed like that for about a half a year, and the next year I got a pretty good job.
Tell me how that relationship works. Who actually employs an auctioneer?
The warehouse firms. Like here in Maysville, there are about 11 different firms, and there are 3 auctioneers, and we are employed by all of them. Mm-hmm. And we are paid according to how much tobacco they sell.
Yes, sir.
So, for instance, we'd be paid more by the home organization, say, than some of the others here, or maybe more by the independent of Kentucky King than some of the smaller.
Right.
You see, if we sell more tobacco in there, naturally, mm-hmm. we're going to get paid for more.
How do these 11 warehousemen come together to decide on these 3
auctioneers? Well, they'll have a committee. And they get recommendations from buyers and from other auctioneers. And they've had an auctioneer change this year on this market. A friend of mine, Walter Wilkerson, is coming here because a auctioneer retired.
Yes, sir.
and left a hole here. And this is they've always had, not because I'm here, but they've had, Maysville's had a reputation of having good auctioneers. They're willing to pay to get good ones, and I think it's paid off for them. Because the auctioneer is the backbone of the thing. It's an auction system. And may not think so, but a guy who can drive, real keep up a full head of steam, and really keep a set of buyers interested, mm-hmm. and keep them energetic and moving, he has a great advantage over one who just goes through the numbers or gets a bid and who is just efficient. It's that extra whatever.
Sure.
That, in other words, I can't, if I don't exude some enthusiasm and some interest in selling it, I can't get those guys worked up very much.
Sure.
So all these, I think, play a part.
Okay. Let me follow up on that with asking you, you're working different places throughout the country in
yeah.
a year, an auctioneer does.
Yeah.
What about the benefits and retirements and all those kind of things? Is that left up to the auctioneer?
Entirely.
Take care of that.
Yeah, entirely. And a lot of guys, even though they make on a pretty good stick during their lifetime, they live it up pretty much, and because they don't have any kind of retirement unless they set it up themselves. No insurance, no nothing. And that's on the other side.
Self-employed.
We're like, you know, we're own agents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make a contract here for this year and make again one for next year. And probably we'll continue staying here as long as we satisfy each other.
Sure.
But if I chose, and I did choose for 5 years to leave here and go to Lexington,
mm-hmm.
because for lots of different reasons, mainly I've just been here a long time and I want
sure.
to play some indoor tennis and stuff.
Uh-huh. You have to make contacts then with each market you're going to work on.
Yeah, one way or another. And generally, if you go to a market this year and you suit them, then you work it out for another year, or sometimes more than another year.
So there's a hierarchy of auctioneers, and there's a hierarchy of markets too.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how much they sell, obviously that relates to income.
Yes.
So an auctioneer works his way up to better markets
and better and bigger sales. I mean, it's hard for a young auctioneer and an experienced auctioneer to go and to sell a full sale, which may be 4 hours
mm-hmm.
long, because he can't sustain. Mm-hmm. You really can't sustain. It's like an opera singer. You can't
sure.
get up and sing for 2 or 3 hours the first year or the first 2 or 3 times. So, it's an experiential thing.
So
I'm still learning.
Maysville is one of the desirable markets then.
So far as I'm concerned,
uh-huh.
it's... Lexington is bigger, but I find this a very efficient market, and I find you don't have to stay here as long,
yes,
say, to make as much money, because Lexington goes on longer, so you're spending, it's expensive living, and I have other things I want to do, because I go to Maryland on this tobacco market too, and that starts in about a month or so. That starts in March the 18th, so it just suits me better. And I know the people. They're nice people here.
Mm-hmm. Let me trace your year then, your year's activities, just to give an idea of what kinds of things auctioneers have to do. Now, you're on this market now, and this started before Thanksgiving and runs now this time through the 1st of February. Then where you go?
I stop here next week,
mm-hmm.
but next Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then I'm finished till March the 18th. I'm up there about 8 weeks.
That's in Maryland.
Uh-huh. And then I'm finished again until sometime in July,
mm-hmm.
which time I go to Georgia. And I work from that time, from Georgia, right on through Virginia, right on up to this thing, except maybe for sometimes in Virginia we'll stop maybe a week or two before Thanksgiving. This market generally opens Thanksgiving week.
Mm-hmm.
So
the Georgia and Virginia markets take you through from July all the way through
right on through November on into February,
mm-hmm.
pretty much.
I see.
But I will have a break. I'll have a nice break Christmas, and I'll have a break between Maryland and Georgia. I'll have a pretty good little break there.
Mm-hmm. But you're fully employed then as an auctioneer.
You can't work anymore than I do. I used to, for 6 years, I went to Central Africa.
Gee.
When it was selling over there.
Uh-huh.
But... It's a nice job in that I only work, to about 2 or 2:30 most of the time. 4 days a week, and I do other things.
Yeah, you still have those other athletic pursuits.
Athletic and all artistic and things that I can do, because this business supports me, that style of life that I enjoy. It's been very good to me that way, and I do other things very seriously. I do other things as seriously as I do auctioneering. However, auctioneering is my bread and butter. But I'm into art. I'm very deeply into art. I've got a degree in art.
I see.
And I'm a tennis pro. Mm-hmm. I belong to USPTA, and I teach some and play, you know, regional in some national tournaments in the senior division. So I have a full plate all the time.
I see.
And I do as much relaxing out here as I I just hang out here, sure. You know, particularly this year, and sell tobacco.
Because of the busyness of the
Yeah. Things.
How does this allow for personal life too much, or because
it is not the best? It is not the best thing for marriage life. I've got four kids I've been married twice, mm-hmm. by my first wife, who was incidentally a tennis pro too, from California,
uh-huh.
And you'll weigh a lot. And that a weekend husband is not the greatest husband in the world, particularly when you got, you know, mm-hmm. young children.
Sure.
And I don't think I was mature enough to know what to do, because I have a lot of regrets at this point about the time I didn't spend with my kids.
Yes.
You know, now that they've grown, it's the only thing you can do is say, well, didn't do so hot that time. Now maybe I'll do a little bit better now.
Right. Well, that's the nomadic life is an interesting part of this tobacco business with the markets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the auctioneers and others are involved in that traveling around. Let me ask you about these different kinds of markets and the tobacco you work with, and give me your feelings about, you know, how you enjoy the differences in the auction process in those different markets. For example, here we're dealing with air-cured burley tobacco.
Right. And and in Maryland, we're dealing with a Maryland-type tobacco, which is not so much for filler of a cigarette, but for it's the fuse of a cigarette kind of. It makes it burn slowly. However, there's a Swiss company which makes a cigarette entirely of Maryland tobacco. Very mild kind of smoke. And it's sort of the punk of the cigarette. So,
Is this more difficult?
To sell?
Uh-huh.
No, it isn't really more difficult to sell, but up there they don't have any support system. It's sold strictly on supply and demand, and fortunately got the supply and demand pretty much in order.
Mm-hmm.
So other than about 2 or 3 years ago, we've had a pretty stable market. Everything is sold at the halter, so you don't drop back and get the stabilization yet. It's the only market that's going like that now that I know about in this country.
What about the Georgia and Virginia tobacco?
That's the old gold bright tobacco, golden leaf you hear about, and flue cured. That probably makes up 2/3 of a cigarette.
And it comes to the market in stages, more or less. You get all similar types of.
Yeah, you get the lower part of the plant, right. and then the middle, and then the top tips, and as it ripens.
Has that changed the auctioneer's strategy?
No, it's because they don't grade it quite as well as they used to. They want to get all the lugs together and the leaf, you know, and
mm-hmm.
cutters and all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
They should try to, but it isn't. See, they don't do it by hands anymore, just like they don't hear.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it tied anymore down there, so it's. But it hasn't really changed anything about the system at all. The system's the same.
Yeah. You mentioned the trip you took overseas to Central Africa.
Uh-huh.
That attracted you just because of the money, adventure of it?
The money and the adventure. Uh-huh. And the I wanted to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the largest tobacco market in the world.
It is.
Oh, yeah. It's in Zimbabwe now. It uh-huh. was called Rhodesia then. And it was called Salisbury, but now it's called Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And I only left when they changed the system, when the government changed.
Right.
And the reason I did it at the time, the auction system became frustrated. And they didn't know how they were going to handle it. However, they do have their own system over there, and they're training their own auctioneers now.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
What?
Flue cured.
It was flu cured.
Flu cured. And
how about the quality of that tobacco?
Quite good.
It was very
good. Quite good. It didn't have the flavor that our tobacco does here in the States. It really, this is the best. We got the best flu cured, I believe, in the world, and the best burley. They have so far, they haven't found any burley that compares to this. Kentucky and Tennessee burley.
So that's been the salvation of our markets.
Yeah, it's good, you know. And even if it's close, the money, they'd much rather have American tobacco. They'd rather pay more and get American tobacco. However, it has gotten where the import tobacco is so much more reasonable. That's what's created with that problem. So it's some place or other. They got to get the supply and demand. They've got to get it. They've got to get the prices comparable to offshore tobacco prices to if they want to keep a good market. They must. There's no question about it. It's like everything else, like the cars and all this stuff that's coming from other places. We've got to get it there. And I think they're doing that. Now, it looks like they're going to get something that's pretty stable for the next 3 years.
Let me trace a little bit backwards with you over this 30 years that you've been auctioneering tobacco. Are there any, as I've done historical work on this, I've read of accounts where farmers closed the warehouse, for example, because it didn't bring a price they wanted. Different kinds of things have impacted on the tobacco business. Are there any incidents that you recall specifically like that?
I was in Georgia not too many years ago when they stopped the sale. The warehouseman stopped the sale because the farmers were rejecting the prices.
I see.
They were expecting more for their lugs. Uh-huh. And they said, and he said, well, sorry, you know, it was done a very nice way.
Sure.
And I've seen, 25 years ago incidents in Maryland where the farmers, say, don't touch that tobacco. They didn't like your prices. Don't put your hands on that tobacco. Walk on by it. And, and threats and stuff like that. But it's been a very, very little of that. Very little. Of course, there have been disappointments. And you'll hear farmers say, there's no way we can make it again another year. And yet you see them again the next year. And they are. It is tough. However, on the other side of the coin, it's a farmer is about the freest man left.
That's true.
Or a rancher.
Sure.
He does, to some extent, call his own shots. So that's the price he has to pay for that kind of freedom, I believe.
Right.
Unfortunately, the companies are making an awful lot of money on cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unfortunate that they aren't passing, instead of to the stockholders, give the farmers a break.
Sure.
Really, give them a break. You got about 5,000 pounds is the average allotment in this area.
Yes, that's true. Uh-huh. And it wouldn't be that much money. You're not talking about.
No, you're not.
A little bit of.
Give them a break.
Sure.
For a change.
Over that 30 years, have you noticed different changes in quality of tobacco? Has tobacco changed much?
No. This when they start buying it in fewer grades, I think the quality was probably, I think the grading was better. That's what they're paying for, is the grading.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a little better then maybe than it is now.
Mm-hmm. As an auctioneer, we've gone from mostly hand-tied to now baled tobacco.
Yeah.
Did that make a difference to an auctioneer?
Not that much.
Mm-hmm.
Not that much, really. Because we're working on we may have to do a little bit more talking now to get the same amount of money, sell more bales.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't changed. It hasn't. No, has not.
Let me run through a few of the, talk about how an auctioneer sets up now. You're trying to please your employer, which you're the warehouseman.
Sure.
So at a sale, there's a time to start the sale and the warehouseman. What's the relationship on that floor between the warehouseman and the auctioneer? He'll often start a sale.
Well, we've been at it so long that, the warehouseman, what he does, he's selling the farmer's tobacco on a commission basis.
Yes, sir.
And what he's trying to do naturally is get the highest prices he possibly can for the farmer. And what he does, he assesses what this tobacco is worth. He'll look at it and say, this tobacco is worth $1.63 for Southwestern Tobacco Company. That's what goes through his head. So mm-hmm. he'll start it. He may start that one at, say, $1.65 and then drop on down, hoping to get three. Yes. He'll look at another pile. He'll say, now, this will make the Reynolds grade. And he'll start at 59, and we might sell it at 59, we might sell it at 57, mm-hmm. we might sell it at 55.
Yes, sir.
But that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And we immediately, what I'm trying to do is take as much load off of him as I can. Mm-hmm. I mean, the more I can do his job for him mm-hmm. even, and just sell it, the better, you know, the more valuable I am to him. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to have the greatest starter. A good starter is very, very important to a sale. But if you've got an experienced auctioneer, uh-huh. if the starter misses what the assessment, and the auctioneer has looked at so much tobacco, mm-hmm. he can reassess it. Mm-hmm. You know, if he starts it too low, he can jump it himself. If he starts it at 45, he'll jump it to 55 himself, trying to get a bid. Mm-hmm. Or if he starts it too high, he'll jump it from $1.60 to drop it to $1.45. This sort of stuff you don't learn in a week or a year.
No, that's the experience. Now, you're doing the same thing then?
Wherever I go.
Uh-huh.
It's where, on any market, it's basically the same thing.
Well, when the same kind of things are going through your mind, though, when you look at, you're thinking, now, this tobacco is good for this price. For
yeah, you. Yeah. My computer is working, too.
I see.
At the same time. Mm-hmm. But, The more experienced he is, the better he is, the better sale we can have.
Mm-hmm. You know? Now, you know, as you walk down a line of tobacco, you have a pretty good idea of which company's going to bid for this particular kind of
yeah,
tobacco.
Yeah, well, a lot of times there'll be three different companies interested in the same kind, or even four.
Mm-hmm.
So and then in that case, it's a matter of my keeping them in rotation and trying to make sure that each get a square deal.
Okay, now explain that for people that
okay. What you're doing, if everybody came out there with exactly the same money, mm-hmm. say all it, in which it has happened back in the 60s, I remember everything was being exactly the same, I don't care what it was. They had it jammed up to $1.66. Well, theoretically, an auctioneer could start at one end and just go around and just keep going around, just taking the buyers in rotation.
Yes, sir.
However, that is a very unusual year, and I think, as well as I remember now, because of past performances of different companies, I think the auctioneers and the warehousemen pretty much honored, say, if Reynolds had been buying 30% on the previous year before that, and Southwestern was buying, say, 40, we've pretty much worked it out the same because they've been pretty supportive of the market.
Now, did you have to keep that in mind all the time?
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You do. And that gets a little bit tricky at times.
Uh-huh.
However, on an ordinary sale, I, as an auctioneer, think the best way to do it is to tie the good to the bad. If a guy is carrying me on the lower end of the crop, and just about anything that stays on the floor and stays on the basket, if he's carrying me there, I'm going to make sure he gets that same percentage of the tops as much as I can. If it's in the way possible, I'm going to deal him more of the tops because he's supporting the farmer better and the market better. It's just the only way I know to do it. I cannot just let him get creamed when we come to the top tobacco because everybody's waiting for that because it's got such good yield, it suits them, they can sell it overseas or whatever.
Sure.
So I've got to make sure that this man who's taking me on the low end, I'm going to tie the good to the bad. And make sure that he comes in first on the tops and then go somewhere else and come back to him again, you know, and they'll bitch. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the others will bitch, you know. Well, I've been on it too. Well, but you haven't been bidding on the others. So they know what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
And as an auctioneer, about really all we got is our ability to perform and our integrity. And
so this is another part of your computer that has to work. You have to keep in mind who's been bidding on everything.
Yeah.
And about how much they bought in the past.
Yeah.
And if we have three bids or the same bid,
Yep.
You decide
yeah.
which one it goes to.
Right. I'll go for it. If I had three of the same guys bidding on it after, at a particular time, I will consider if it's particular what part of the sale it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's on, say, the fifth row,
yes.
I will know by that time how much, so much, who has bought what. Then I would knock it out first. I'd give the first one to the man who's bought the most, second to the man who's bought the second most, and third to the man who's bought the third most. And everybody else may be bidding,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I see.
And because I haven't been supported, so, and I'm getting the same thing offered, only getting the same thing offered from the rest of the buyers that these guys offer. But however, they're not participating in the other end of the market.
Right. So you have the interest of the farmer trying to get the poor tobacco sold too.
Very much so, because it's so much of it.
It's and yes.
Yeah, it ain't all good.
That's true.
You see, and that's what gets the average up.
This is side two of a tape with Mr. Bob Cage by John Clee for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. We were talking about what's actually happening on a sale and how you decide which buyer gets piled tobacco based on if they're bidding the same price. I've mentioned the relationship you have with the warehouseman. What kind of relationship do you have to have with the buyers?
Good. First of all, you don't have to have a good buddy-buddy type relationship.
Uh-huh.
And as a matter of fact, I'm not. That's fine if for some people.
Mm-hmm.
However, I remain remote to that situation in that I just find that I have a better working relationship if my social life is divorced from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I seem to, because what happened the night before, I don't want it to be involved in the next day, or you know, and I don't want somebody talking to me, conning me into getting more tobacco, for instance, which can happen, you know.
Yes,
but when they're on a tight situation, they got their bosses in, you know, I don't want that to happen to them. I don't want that pressure. I don't want that hassle. And another thing, I just want them to be able to say, well, Bob's going to give me a square deal. I don't care what happens. I normally get a square deal when they walk in there. That's the best thing I can have going for me. And I don't have to, I don't even know all the buyers' names, a lot of them. You know, unless I work with them on two or three markets, I don't know their names, but I know their stalls. I know what slot they fit in line. See,
okay, right.
When one gets out of line, another comes in. I know that's Reynolds' place. I know this is Southwestern's place. I know this is Export American. So I may not know him, but a buyer from another market or a circuit man may come in and have a relief buyer in, and he just slips in there. So I immediately take him as an American's bid. I may not have seen him before.
Sure.
You see. Okay. But it's very good. It's always good to have a good, warm, amicable relationship with your buyers. And
you mentioned the placement of the buyers. That's based on the amount of tobacco they buy
pretty
each year.
Yeah.
And you know, their preference, I suppose.
Yes. They get the choice sort of places. And I think the choice probably place would be some buyers like it in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Some like it in because they can see the back tobacco coming further ahead, you see.
Right.
Uh-huh. Others like it sort of in front of them. But generally, I think probably right across from the auctioneer would maybe back the best place. And you're still, you know, between the tobacco and where you are is about the distance we're looking at.
That's true.
Uh-huh. You know, I would say that's 5 or 6 feet, isn't it?
Yes. Who actually decides that pecking order? Is that the sales supervisor or the warehouse?
I think it's something worked out with the Tobacco Board of Trade and the sales supervisors and the companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they work it out from a percentage point of view. Yeah.
Now that doesn't change too much over the years.
Not much. Sometimes it does. A company may lose some business, may not be selling as many cigarettes and not buying as much. Like Liggett Myers used to be a big factor on this market. They're not even on the market. They haven't been on here for a number of years.
Yes,
sir. See, and they used to be follow behind the auctioneer. They used to carry a big stick.
Yes.
See, they're gone. Some of the other companies are no longer here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So you have to relearn that a little bit each year.
Well, but it doesn't take long.
Mm-hmm.
You just put it in your computer.
How do the buyers react to an auctioneer? Now you have to look at the tobacco, and the warehouseman's maybe pulling you along or trying to start the sales. how you recognize bids, do they?
Well, most of them, the best way for a tobacco buyer to bid is with their hands. Mm-hmm. If they want to bid 57, get two fingers up. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's for sure what they got. You know, if we're crying 55 and one bids 57, you get up two. If he wants to bid 56, he gets up one.
Okay.
If we're crying 55 and he turns down a fist, that means he's trying to bid 50. If he turns it up, that means he's bidding 60.
Okay.
You see, if I'm crying 55, he's throwing up three fingers, he's owing me 58. If I'm crying 60, he holds up three, he's owing me 63. So they are in that hole. Mm-hmm. They got that hole blocked and they know it. Mm-hmm. Then that's the best way. However, if you've got you got some buyers who bid a lot by just looking at you, but when the tobacco, when they're bidding is spirited, they got the fingers out.
Throw
the fingers out, uh-huh. Because there's no question. I got it up in your face. I got 63. Don't you see? That's three. That isn't two. That isn't one. You know, I can't put him in a different hole.
Right.
I can't put him in a hole he doesn't want to be in at that point. I got to tell him. I says three is against you. Give me four. You know, because somebody may have beat him in, but he doesn't know that. Some of the guy might have thrown it in and hit him back here. And it's that way and looking at the tobacco. They're looking at the tobacco when they look up, they're bidding. As long as they look at you, they're bidding. They don't have to wink, they don't have to do anything, but just look at me and they're bidding. And I will take him as long as I got another bid.
And you're talking about 8, 9, 10, 11?
Sometimes 13 or 14.
How does that
all work? It's a bunch of it. I'll tell you right now. So you got hands and things flying all over the place sometimes.
And you're just moving fast.
Move just as fast as you can go. Mm-hmm. At least I do.
Is there a purpose to moving fast?
Lots of reasons, I think. I think, you know, I'm a pretty fast auctioneer. And the reason I am is because I think it's the best way to sell tobacco. You can't go lickety split with every set because you don't have anybody on there who can bid that fast sometimes. On the other sets, you got fast bidders and guys that think fast and you can flat fly. Mm-hmm. And some, you can't, to get the best sale, you got to slow it down and plow, you know, and work a lot harder to get the same amount of money. It depends a lot on this set of buyers. But generally, the more enthusiasm and the faster I can sell it, it's less time for them to find something wrong with it. Mm-hmm. It's less time for them to get disgruntled. If a mistake is made, you can cover it up in a very few minutes. If a guy gets cut out of this crop, if you keep moving, it's just a matter of time before you can get him, throw him back into that one to get his percentage right. And so a lot can go on. But if you're dragging, it's easier for them, the buyers, I think, to start dividing the tobacco up, you know. They got time to sort of, well,
since
I'm
the other guys.
Yeah, you know, without even saying anything, they'll start, instead of 55, the first thing you know, they'll drop to 50, and then he'll let one, the other guy will only be at 50, and then he'll be at 50 again.
Uh-huh.
Well, if I can keep that sale zipped up, and as soon as that guy comes in and say 51 or 52, I'll knock it, then the next time, the other man's got to come in.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to wait and him and haw and say it's against you, you know, break it up or any of that sort of mess.
So it forces them to act.
That's what I try to do.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever told me that. Mm-hmm. But this has evolved, and, you know, it must have worked because I won that championship, you know, a couple of years ago.
As you go down the line of tobacco and you've got those different people, the tobacco, there's a big variety of tobacco, but eventually you get around to the same type. So
right.
Most everybody has a tobacco that they need or want. Or
yeah. And like I said earlier, the good tobacco is always, good ripe tobacco is always in demand.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. Because the yield is better. The more flavor and more yield.
I see.
It's just better value for them.
Right.
Because if it's green, you know, and if it's dirty, if there's more processing, there's more labor involved, the yield still isn't as good. They'll have to put it into different types of products.
Now, does an auctioneer auction? I think I know the answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Auctioneers don't have to study. They don't go down on the market on the floor before the, and they usually don't go back and check and see.
I don't. As soon as that sale's over, I am gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hear any bitches.
Mm-hmm.
If they got them, I don't want to hear them because I've done all I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to hear from the buyers. I don't want somebody to say, hey, come here and see if we can't get a raise on this sort of thing. I think it promotes that sort of thing, and I don't believe in it.
Sure.
And I don't get there, I don't get there as early as some do. I think it would probably help if I got there and maybe talked more to the farmers or to the buyers, but yes, I just don't.
Allows in for.
Yeah, I don't, it isn't my style. Mm-hmm. You know, my thing is trying to get to dance those guys down that road as fast as I can, as well as I can, and get on to the next sale.
Most of the complaints that you might hear would come from buyers because
yeah.
They don't think you're giving them
that's it.
Knocking off enough.
That's
them.
It. Uh-huh. And most of the time you can explain to them why. They, mm-hmm. You know, they will wonder why they didn't get dealt into this crop. But they forget that another buyer had probably taken me through the last three crops mm-hmm. where he didn't make a bid.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And they regardless of what, most of them are not unreasonable, however. Yeah, the only time it gets tight is when their circuit men are coming in and tobacco is jammed up close to the top, and then they get nervous because they want to make sure they get the right grades and right amount while they got the circuit or the head men in, see. And that's when it gets shaken. All that stuff filters right into the auctioneer. You know, you can feel it. You know, and you try. I do. I try. When they have a boss man in, or somebody's very important, I really do all I can to make sure that they get a good break mm-hmm. as well as I can
right.
at that particular time. I would want somebody to do that to me. And the other buyers know it.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they're going to cut back. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to make sure he's got to get whatever he can while they're in there.
Because tomorrow it might be the next buyer.
Exactly. And maybe I'm telling the stories out of school, but you know.
Sure.
I don't find anything wrong with it.
No. Do you ever get farmers are often standing a row behind
yeah.
or watching as the crop goes by? Do you ever get very many comments from farmers?
No, very little. Farmers, you know, I'm one myself. I've got a couple of tobacco farms. It's human nature to bitch a lot of times, it seems
sure.
to me. A lot of people, they're going to bitch. You know, it's fashionable mm-hmm. almost. You know, they'll have a loaf of bread in each arm and butter running out, but they're still bitching. You know, and
human condition.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or whatever it brings. I thought I'd get more.
Sure.
You know, sort of thing. But I don't like. To, I don't really pay a lot of attention to it. And I'm selling. It's all I can do. It's all I want to do is to keep my alertness and focus. That makes a difference in anything you do. In any case, is the focus you put on it.
We've had the advent of women buyers the last few
uh-huh.
years. Was that a shock to an auctioneer? Or?
It was a novelty at first,
uh-huh.
but they've done real well.
Okay.
Some of them, I think, have done better than the men.
Uh-huh. Well, that's kind of what I wanted your reaction.
Yeah, that. Some of them have, mm-hmm. you know, and
they've earned their spot too. Then.
Yeah. And it hasn't hurt. I think it's helped.
Yeah.
And they have a few women ticket markers. I don't think they have any women auctioneers.
That's what I was going to ask.
Not tobacco. Mm-hmm. It's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying a woman couldn't do it.
Sure.
I'm sure they one could. But so far they haven't been into that.
You mentioned, and I was wanting to talk about this, the competitions for auctioneers added, I guess, a little bit of recognition.
It was interesting.
For what
yeah,
this hasn't been going on for too many years.
This has been 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
This past year was 5 years.
And this is in Danville?
Danville, Virginia. On October this year, it'll be on October the 11th. I believe last year was on October the 11th. And it's been a thing that's brought right much interest to the tobacco business in general, the whole industry, and it's been a very festive occasion.
Yes.
About 35 or 40,000 people would show up. Like this past year, they had Ronnie Millsap, who's a very fine, popular singer, with a lot of number one hits, and they had Ray Charles, and they had the World Championship Tobacco Auctioneer, of which I was fortunate enough to win in 84.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I knew that you had success.
So. Yeah, and but I had tried it 3 years before and hadn't. And I'm not so sure that I didn't don't know as I didn't I performed any better than I did before. It's just you got different judges, and different
sure.
judges see things differently.
Right.
And all one is as competent as the other. Mm-hmm. But I was real pleased to win it.
Sure.
There were about 75 of us, and they break that down into 10, and then of those 10, they take the top three. It was a $10,000 prize now.
Oh, I didn't recognize it.
Yeah, $5,000 beautiful ring, and a chance to take trips in a lot of different places.
Sure.
With whomever you want to take, and I had the good luck to go to the Kentucky Derby for 3 days, and yeah. New Orleans and Boston and all kinds of places.
So, besides the recognition, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's we sort of ambassadors mm-hmm. for the industry. And we'll do talks and, you know, like do the FFA into festivals and just whatever.
Just the other day you were talking to a school group.
Mm-hmm. I talked to two school groups since I got back.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Parent Teachers Association, about 300 kids there. I never saw it. Were you there?
No, I heard about the report. They one of my students had a child there.
Oh yeah.
He said I went to PTA meeting. I was glad I went because
yeah. Well, I'm glad
here was there.
I didn't know what to do, you know. But it's stuff like that. I never really know what to do till I get there and sort of feel out the crowd and see what they want.
Right. Who's there? Well, that's the next thing I kind of want to talk about is about the actual chant. Your chant as opposed to other chants.
Yeah, what they judge this contest on would be chant, mm-hmm. the speed, the execution of sale, settling disputes.
I see. Uh-huh.
You know, and those things. And you have to do all these things in a matter of about 2 or 3 minutes because you're on stage and in front of these judges.
Mm-hmm.
And a chant is important. It's very important because they're all different types. And if one has everything that the other has, plus a beautiful voice, then he has something special, you know.
I know it's difficult in this kind of environment. You know, we're just talking with each other here, and it's easier when you're in a tobacco.
Oh, yeah, well, it's totally different because it's just like turning your car on here and not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, this is then racing the engine. It sounds ridiculous, and it'll wear you out. You know, you got to have something going with you.
Well, I have already taped some auctions, and I plan on doing some more, but I wanted you to give me just some little taste of, for example, how your chant differs from other chants. And
well, I have a chant that it's easy to change. I don't have much $55 and stuff like that. I got five, six, you know, fast like that. Mine's fast and fairly choppy.
Yeah.
But other guys will have a slower sort of rhythm,
mm-hmm.
and it suits that personality better, you know. There's a guy who will say, $50, $55, $56, $58, $59, $60, $1, $2, $3, $4, $5, $6, $7, like that, $6 to $7 bid.
Uh-huh.
And another will
now,
do...
give me a little bit of your chant to kind of compare that.
Well, it's real... because I chant different all the time.
Oh, I see.
You know, it depends on who the buyers, you know, it's you can. Like that. You know, and mine is probably revved up a little bit more.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
Deal with that.
And another guy may have, there's one guy who says, he 50. 51 yen, 2 yen, 3 yen, 54 yen, 5 yen, 60 yen, and American. 57 yen, 80 yen, 90 yen, 60 yen, 1 yen, 2 yen, 3 yen, 4 yen, 5 yen, run, John. Like that, you know. That's the way he sounds. So they all have different types of rhythm. No, some are very, very methodical and even. Like that, you know. And it's just whatever suits one. There's no way
mm-hmm.
to do it.
Are there regional variations or
no?
No,
not really. This I don't know. Maybe I don't know why, but the first four of us who won the world championship were from Virginia.
Oh,
and up around in the Danville, South Boston, Clarksville, Cambridge area, you know, there. And maybe it's because, I don't know, but I've often wondered, it might be because tobacco was a little harder to sell there to start with. I mean, I think our training was probably tougher. Mm-hmm. Tougher basic training, because you had to be able to go both ways. In Virginia, you're selling this flu cure that comes off of all different kinds of lands.
I see.
You know, and it's, you have to do a lot of jockeying around to be able to run the scale backwards and forwards. You know, so that might have had something to do with it, the first four. I don't know.
Just a lot. The quality of the tobacco because of the different land.
Yeah, and it was harder to sell. So if you have harder training, you know, a guy that goes into Marines who has to take a harder and tougher training is, when he gets into combat, he's in better shape than, say, a sailor who's aboard ship and, you know, different things.
Do you, the sales that earlier in this year, for example, here in Maysville, you sold in the morning, in the afternoon, and went from one place to another. You're pretty well worn out after a day, as far as, is it a...
Depends on a lot. It depends on what an auctioneer does not like to do is stop. Mm-hmm. He would like to sell one pile from here to, one row from here to Ripley.
That'd be done.
Not even turn corners. You know, that's what I like. I just wish they had one...
Big long
road. Like a railroad track. And get somebody, when you finish, to drive you back or something. It's the turning around and the stopping that gets you. You know, I have to warm up my engine, get it going. When they stop, I got to crank back up and get my rhythm going again and all that. You know, it just, you don't just get in your car here and start and go to 60 miles an hour.
That's right.
And that's almost what you have to do to sell tobacco. And that sort of gets to you a little bit. Another thing, you'll have sets of buyers who are not as confident.
Now you'll work with different sets of buyers, yeah, each day.
Yeah,
each day.
We'll have three sets of buyers here, and I every fourth day, let's say, I'll work with one set one day, and a second, and then a third, and then one again.
Right.
Two and three. But
now we're down to two sets now.
Yeah. So we just switch. One day I have one, and Charlie, right, folks have the other one. The next day.
Does, of course, you can't make a generalization, I don't guess, about do they let their youngest buyers go, they let their oldest one? Is it easier now with just the two sets?
Or? Not necessarily.
Yeah, because you don't.
No, right. Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's one set will work you more than others. You know, and sometimes this year, like I sold 1,500 piles yesterday, mm-hmm, 1,500, that's a lot. You set up on 1,260. My set had 1,500. And something, and the other side only had eight, just the way the brakes went. But that was a pretty good healthy day's work. And so I was a little tired, but, and I didn't have the swiftest set of buyers in the world. Some buyers like to go. Mm-hmm. You know, just you can turn your heat on and they can take it and go. Others, you just don't get a good sale if you go that fast. You have to do more talking to get the same amount of money.
It takes a lot of psychic energy, I guess.
It does. Yeah,
I can remember who's going to get what now if I got the same,
yeah,
bid. And,
yeah. But after a while, it gets a lot of its reflexes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just do it instinctively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As far as the tobacco business, you've been involved now for many years and so forth. How are some of the things that have been happening nationally, locally, so forth, how are they impacting or... are you ever called upon as you said, you're a representative of tobacco to a certain extent, having won the national championship.
But you know, it hasn't. It's funny. I've been to all these different places, and nobody's put me on a spot, mm-hmm, about it. I was on a spot here one time, and this little town, where my Episcopal minister, mm-hmm, asked me how I could justify selling tobacco and stuff like that. But it had made me mad. And I think I answered him such a way where they were putting him down that he wished he hadn't asked me, you know.
Right.
But that's funny. Nobody has said, how can you justify this? I tell these people to be proud of that, sure, their product, mm-hmm, you know. And it's unfortunate that this law about 14 years ago came out that, the way I see it, it's unfortunate in that anything that one should be able to, one can manufacture, they should be able to advertise.
Sure. Yeah.
And the hypocrisy gets me. You know, if you've got 500,000 beer commercials a year, you know, and what happened with alcoholism, which is a drug just like nicotine is and like caffeine is, I mean, why don't, that's the problem. That's the problem I have with it.
Yeah.
The problem of the government trying to be a nanny to everybody. I just have problems with that.
And there's a certain amount of selective attention towards tobacco, as you pointed out, and not caffeine and not alcohol and some of the other
right, the cholesterol and many other things that people do, you see. Obesity kills more people than cigarettes or alcohol or anything else. What, are you going to stop people from eating butter, for God's sakes?
That's true.
It's ridiculous. And it's some real sick stuff going on now where people are going around and shooting squirt guns on people in parks on these no smoke out days and junk like that. That really isn't characteristic of what this country's about.
Sure. But you haven't really faced too much of that.
Mm-mm. People haven't. I read about it. I hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want them to ask me.
Sure. So you
I want
yourself.
Them and ask me, you know, let me tell you how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm. How many more years do you see yourself selling tobacco?
As long as I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I enjoy it, and mainly that, and need to do it. I still have a need to do it.
Sure.
Because for whatever I seem to make, I seem to find a place to use it pretty fast. I like the energy that money gives you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was another way sometimes.
Sure.
But it's that green energy that I need. It allows me the wherewithal to do other stuff, to do art and to do other things I like to do.
You're kind of at the top of the craft too. You mentioned Charlie Folks and yourself, two experienced auctioneers.
Well,
you get to stay on the market. You choose your market to a certain extent now because you're, are there occasions where people from Lexington or other markets, do you get contacts? You know, we'd like you to consider selling with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, sure. You do. And, you know, or a friend will say, hey, there's an opening over here, and I think they'd like you, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's that. But I haven't been one to jump around. I like to get someplace, and I've done very little jumping in my life. I was on this market 20-some years before I went to Lexington.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed over about 5 years, and I'm pleased to be back here now.
That brings up, and I don't really want any detail, I'm just kind of interested in the, you're hired by the warehouseman and they sign an individual contract with you.
Mm-hmm.
Will auctioneers then negotiate for more per pound? I mean,
yes.
It's not a standard thing. And
right.
You get more because you sell more. It's both the percentage and how much you sell.
Mm-hmm. Right. In other words, if we were on so much of the gross percent,
mm-hmm.
and if I don't feel like it, that I'm getting enough, I'll ask for a larger percent of the gross.
Mm-hmm.
Or here, I feel like it, that we are worth more, or they're getting more on another market,
mm-hmm.
like a friend of mine might be in Lexington.
Sure.
I will say, you know, we're considered the same type of auctioneers, we worked on the same markets and all, he's paid such and such, I feel like I deserve as much, and he might do the same, and that might be a lever, or we are offered more to go to Lexington or to someplace else, and we'll come back and say, hey, listen, I don't want to leave here, but I'm offered this over there, I'm offered another so many thousand dollars or so many bucks, I'd rather stay here, can you meet that? And then you negotiate it. If they can, or if they come close and you still want to stay. But there can be a limit, you see, mm-hmm. as to how much they can according to how much tobacco they sell. We know that.
Yeah. I asked you about, you know, about the impact of the tobacco business. Have you seen anything with, for example, buyers dropping off the market or any less demand over the last few years?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
of export tobacco. Our export market used to be about, I guess, 35 or 40%, and I think it's way back now. I don't know exactly what the figures are.
Sure.
We're losing export business. We used to have Imperial, tobacco company, which was a very big buyer, English tobacco. I think they're getting most of that tobacco cheaper in Rhodesia now. That's another thing. And general consumption of cigarettes isn't as great as it was. However, they're making much money. They're still making lots and lots and lots of money. Most of their money is to make on tobacco. And R.J. Reynolds pays $1 million a day in taxes. A day. Doesn't that blow your mind?
It really does. And you could tell when you were selling tobacco, usually those export buyers would have an independent buying form, but you would know
that it was
going overseas.
Yeah, well, by the companies who buy it, because some of the companies don't. You know, they're buying, most of that business is export business. Mm-hmm. They're dealers, they're merchants, you know.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you talking to me.
Yeah, man, I hope you found out something.
I sure did.
The following is a recording of a tobacco auction on the Maysville Market, February the 11th, 1986.
Yeah. Hey, Mark. It's Sam Fields.
You gotta have a great one. That's the truth. Where's the star?
Right here.
Auction was conducted at the Home Warehouse. The auctioneer was Bob Cage.